This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. We'll start today with two major decisions from the U.S. Supreme Court about law and the digital age. In a moment, we'll talk about the court's ruling against the streaming television company Aereo.
But first, the biggest decision of the day was a landmark ruling that states unequivocally that Americans do have an expectation of privacy when it comes to their cell phones and smartphones. The justices ruled unanimously on two cases, one in California, the other in Massachusetts, where law enforcement officers searched a suspect's cell phone after arrest.
So here's a bit of background on the Boston case. In 2007, police arrested Brema Wuori after an apparent drug deal. They searched his flip phone and found Wuori's home address. Then they searched his home and found a larger stash of drugs and guns. Wuori was convicted and sentenced to more than 21 years in prison.
Today, in a sweeping ruling written by Chief Justice John Roberts, the court found such cell phone searches unconstitutional. Roberts wrote, quote, "The fact that technology now allows an individual to carry such information in his hand does not make the information any less worthy of the protection for which the founders fought. Our answer to the question of what police must do before searching a cell phone seized incident to an arrest is accordingly simple. Get a warrant." Joining me now is Matthew Siegel. He's the legal director for the ACLU in Massachusetts. Matthew, welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having me.
So first of all, what's your reaction to the court's decision today?
This is a terrific and an enormously important decision that's going to shape privacy rights in this country for years.
I mean, it seems unbelievably broad-reaching. It seems as if all sort of cell phone digital information the court has handled in one fell swoop, saying that Americans do have a Fourth Amendment expectation to privacy there.
Right. I mean, the cases will have to be worked out in the future on a case-by-case basis, of course. But what the court is saying here, and as you noted, unanimously, is that digital information is just different.
Mm. Well, and tell us a little bit more about that, because the decision does draw a very strong distinction between, say, privacy expectations in the home and regarding physical objects and digital privacy. And it seems as if John Roberts and the other eight justices are saying digital privacy requires perhaps even more protection.
Right. And this case is a very good picture of the argument that the government, both the federal government and state governments, have been making in many cases all throughout the country, and including in the NSA context that we've been hearing about with Ed Snowden. And what the government always says is that it is easy and neat to apply pre-digital cases about physical objects to 21st century cases about digital objects. And the court said, not only is that wrong in this case, and not only is that wrong in general, but it's just absurd. There's a line that Chief Justice Roberts said when she says that saying that a search of a physical item is like a search of a cell phone is like saying a ride on horseback is the same as a flight to the moon.
Right. I wonder what you and the ACLU think that the effect of this case might have on law enforcement going forward. I know that the ACLU in the past has been concerned that perhaps people might get arrested, under small pretense or charges, just so that police could search cell phones. That seems to have this decision seems to have closed the door on that, you know, unless law enforcement gets a warrant. But do you think that there's a possibility that the ruling could hamper the work of law enforcement?
Well, it's true that sometimes privacy gets in the way of what police officers want to do, and that's a choice that our founders made in establishing our rights to privacy. But it's also a choice that we make every day in valuing privacy over absolute security. We don't allow police officers into our homes, even though if they were allowed into all of our homes, they might find evidence of crimes there. And what the court said today is that really, just as the home has been traditionally thought as the pinnacle of privacy, your cell phone is no different.
Right. And Matthew, I'm wondering what you think about the fact that Chief Justice John Roberts, in his decision, went to pains to reference the American Revolution. You know, he talked about John Adams rebelling against the search warrants issued by the British Army as one of the causes that plunged the country into the Civil War, and then later on went into the Fourth Amendment regarding illegal search and seizure. Why do you think he reached back into history that way?
Well, there are a couple of reasons. One is to show how unanimous and how collectively the court was in reaching this decision. It was a decision that conservatives and liberals agreed to, and citing to the founders, I think, was a way of pointing that out. But the second reason is that this goes back to the point about the government's arguments being basically absurd, which is that the court is trying to restore a level of privacy that existed at before the digital era, and a level of privacy that American patriots have been fighting for ever since the revolution. So this is about restoring a level of privacy that has been threatened by the government's approach to the digital age.
Matthew Siegel is legal director for the Massachusetts ACLU. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Well, let's turn now to Professor Adam Gershowitz. He's a professor at William & Mary Law School. Adam Gershowitz, welcome to you.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Well, first of all, let's talk a little bit more about the level of detail that's encompasses that this decision encompasses. Because we here at Radio Boston, we're all struck by the fact that John Roberts seemed to go to pains to describe how different cell phone and digital data is from the rest of objects or information that that Americans might have with them. I mean, he goes to write that more than 90% of Americans have such devices, that they track everything in your lives, their pocketbooks, their checkbooks, their GPS devices. I mean, why do you think he went to such lengths to explain how important these devices are in American lives?
Well, he actually went into so much detail. I think one of the statistics he quoted cited the number of people who take the phone with them into the shower as they go about their business in the morning to sort of point out just how connected and tethered people are to their phones. I think it was something he had to do to reach this kind of decision, because up until now, this is an exception to the Fourth Amendment, the search incident to arrest exception. For decades and decades, drew absolutely no distinction about the type of evidence we were searching for. And so the court has had these bright line rules allowing the police to search incident to arrest. And this is really the first major landmark case in which we see them saying, you know what? The type of evidence really matters to what the scope of this exception should be. It's almost unheard of in Fourth Amendment law.
Right. Just to jump in here, I mean, the court said referenced several cases in the past and saying, yes, we have granted exception to warrantless searches, but that the rationale used in those previous rulings regarding physical objects don't have any force with respect to digital content.
Yeah, those cases were all decided before any of this technology was in the glimmer of anyone's eye at that point. And so those cases had very sweeping language about protecting police and preventing the destruction of evidence. But nobody could have foreseen the amount of searching that could have been done on a cell phone when those cases were decided.
I mean, that was just a direct response to an argument that the Justice Department was making when they were defending the use of warrantless searches for cell phones. But John Roberts also writes that a cell phone search would typically expose the government to far more than the exhaustive search of a regular house. So is there any possibility that the court here is carving out distinct rights for digital privacy, whether or not it has to do with digital information on a mobile device?
Yeah, it's really hard to read the tea leaves moving forward just because the court has not taken many of these cases. If you look back to two terms ago, they decided the case in United States versus Jones about the GPS surveillance of vehicles, and that case was decided 9-0, just like today's cases were decided 9-0. So you could sort of read between the lines and say the court is recognizing that the surveillance technology and computer searches are just a whole different animal than what we've been doing up till now. But you've got to do that based on very little evidence at this point, because the court has really not waded much into this territory at all.
Now, law enforcement officials and the Justice Department both argued that cell phones and smartphones could be dangerous. They could be used to set off bombs, et cetera. And so, therefore, warrantless seizing and searching of those devices should have been held constitutional. But the court disagreed there. They basically said there's a simple remedy for that.
Yeah, and the remedy for that is to either two things. Number one, there is an exigency exception that's just totally different from this that still allows the police, if they can really credibly point to exigent circumstances, to search the cell phone. There's been very, very few of those cell phone search cases that could really at this point ever have fallen under that exigency exception, but it does exist. And the other rationale that gets thrown about is that evidence could be destroyed, but there's a very simple explanation for what to do about that, which is if you wrap the phone in aluminum foil, put in a Faraday bag or just power it off, it should preserve all of the evidence and information that's on the phone while the police wait for the warrant.
Yeah. Briefly, I'm wondering, what effect is this ruling today going to have on, you know, who knows, the hundreds if not thousands of convictions that have gone through the U.S. court system based on warrantless searches of cell phones?
Yeah, I don't think there's been quite that many, and I don't think sort of retrospectively looking backwards, it's going to affect a tremendous number of convictions. Usually once a case is final after the Supreme Court has denied relief to somebody, that's usually the end of it. So it will affect some cases. I think it's much, much more important moving forward. You know, police departments had gotten used to being able to conduct these type of searches, and right now across the country, thousands of police departments are scrambling to figure out how they're going to teach their officers what to do in these circumstances.
Yeah.
And tell them they've got to do something different than what they've been doing up till now.
Now, if we take a step back, it seems impossible to read this decision without shedding some light on the ongoing controversy regarding NSA and metadata collection by the National Security Agency. Because Chief Justice Roberts writes in today's decision that digital data stored on a cell phone cannot itself be used as a weapon. Data on the phone can endanger no one. Could this case have any effect on the NSA?
You know, there's a lot of language in the opinion that'll be very helpful to the lawyers when it comes to that, when the court cases start showing up for that. In terms of actual sort of binding legal precedent out of this, I don't think there's anything, despite the sweeping language in it, that's going to sort of mandate that something happens one way or the other in the NSA or the metadata cases. The court, as is usually the case, was very careful to say they're deciding this discrete issue, the search of a cell phone incident to arrest, and they're not making a determination about what to do in another context. You know, the flavor of the opinion is certainly going to be helpful to people who were challenging that kind of government activity, but I don't think you could say for certain that there's anything in here that it will definitively change much.
Yeah. And finally, I'm wondering if I could just ask you one question about sort of the legal philosophy that we see unfolding here in today's decision. Because Chief Justice Roberts basically writes, as we discussed a few minutes ago, that past statutes really weren't written with today's technology in mind. And he seemed to be saying that, yes, we do have something of a living constitution, which isn't something you often hear from conservative legal scholars. I mean, is that an accurate reading of this?
I don't know. I'd be a little hesitant to read too much of that into it. You are right that Chief Justice Roberts and certainly Justice Scalia and Thomas are not going to be typically in the mold of saying we're having a living constitution. I think the decision's probably just a little more explainable by the thought process of Chief Justice Roberts probably does have an iPhone. He probably has a whole bunch of apps on it, and he can see how this affects people like him and people like the rest of us in a way that sometimes in Fourth Amendment jurisprudence, they're not able to put themselves in the shoes of criminal defendants. And so I don't know that it's going to show a shift in the philosophy of how they interpret the Constitution generally, but it may, for Fourth Amendment jurisprudence, sort of signal that we're embarking on a new era with respect to technology.
Well, that's Adam Gershowitz, professor at William and Mary Law School and an expert in digital law, talking to us today about the Supreme Court's 9-0 landmark ruling in favor of digital privacy and cell phones when it comes to police and warrantless searches of cell phones. Adam Gershowitz, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you very much.